When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
This is CBS, Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with my colleague and friend Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. Indonesia. We welcome senior fellow at the Atlantic Council and former deputy U.S. ambassador to the U.N., Kelly Curry, to help us on news from Indonesia. First, the parade in Beijing. Indonesia's Prabowo attends China's military parade as protests rage at home. This is the South China Post. So we're looking at news from China's point of view. Indonesian president makes one-day visit to Beijing for World War II anniversary after skipping Shanghai Cooperation Organization summit earlier in the week. I mentioned the World War II anniversary, just as an aside, was a complete act of fiction writing and not real, but it was attended by Mr. Prabowo as if it was real. Kelly, a very good day to you. There's trouble in Indonesia, and we'll head there immediately, but is there any significance to a man who's wearing sunglasses in Beijing appearing suddenly at a parade that is based upon a make-believe story? Good evening to you, Kelly.
Good evening, John. Well, there's a lot going on here. So Indonesia did suffer under Japanese colonialism and has a very, they have one of these typical Southeast Asian relationships with the Japanese where they're happy to take their aid money, but like to throw their colonial legacy in their face as a form of guilting and pushing. And Indonesia also, you will recall, was a leader in the non-aligned movement after World War II and during the Cold War. But likes to play both sides and all sides and up the middle. And so this is a typical Indonesian move to try to split the baby by not coming to the SCO and showing up for the parade, because that's a twofer they can get at the Japanese, even though they know the story is a fiction. But it's a nice way to kind of throw a bone to the Chinese and keep the Chinese investment money flowing to Indonesia, which it has been doing quite heavily, but not go all the way, just dip their beak a little bit, but not stick their whole head underwater, as it were.
I mentioned a headline that is attached also to that subhead in the South China Morning Post. Indonesia is bracing for more violence. This is Foreign Affairs. Corruption and police brutality have created a public ready to riot. Is this new? Is this new news to us, or has this been going on for some time underground?
So this is a long story in Indonesia. You have a lot of tension since independence in Indonesia between the democratic desires of the Indonesian people and their desire to be treated with dignity and humanity, and a difficult to govern place. Let's be honest here. Thousands of islands spread across a huge area, large ethnically diverse population, underdeveloped. And so it's a struggle to govern. I worked at the local level and at the national level in Indonesia on governance, so I've seen this firsthand. But the government tends to go back and forth between control and authoritarianism and kind of shambolic muddling along democracy. And the people of the country, you know, if it goes too far in one direction, if it goes too far toward anarchy, people get mad and they vote in or they bring in a more authoritarian figure. If it goes too far towards authoritarianism, they will push back on that too, because there is a very strong, and especially since the 1999 election and the Democratic Revolution of the late 90s, there is a very strong democratic identity and strong civil society and a strong impulse toward democratization and pluralism in Indonesia that resists that authoritarian impulse. So this is a long story in a sense. And corruption has been such a huge problem for decades in Indonesia. And so, I mean, at one point it was at the bottom of the Transparency International's corruption index as one of the most corrupt countries in the world. It's improved, but it's still such a huge problem. Again, going back to this governance challenge that is that exists in Indonesia and has always existed.
Gordon, you have a question for Kelly.
Kelly, my impression is that Indonesia has always been a society which you can sort of feel the tension underneath, even when it was peaceful. And I don't know if that's really true or not, but you can just sense it when you went to Jakarta. And then also the other thing about Indonesia, and again, it's just an impression, when there are explosions, those explosions are very fast and very violent. Your comments on just these impressions?
Yes, I think that's actually right. I mean, one of the funny things is that Indonesia has always been called a nation in waiting. And then the other kind of idea about is that it's a constructed nation, right? Because it's a bunch of islands and it's a bunch of cultures that have been tried to fuse together. And you have this kind of dominance from the Javanese, which is the big island and where Jakarta and Surabaya and the new capital are. But there's so much tension, so many different kinds of tensions up and down and side to side in the society, religious, ethnic, economic, so many different kinds of tension that they are always just operating under the surface. And they're, you know, it doesn't take much of a spark to cause an explosion. And Indonesians have a famously long fuse, you know, they're known for being very, very, you know, everybody goes along and gets along right up until the moment that they don't. And then when it pops, it really pops. It can be quite violent. It can be quite, you know, and murderous and just, you know, people knifing each other in the streets kind of stuff. It's a challenging place.
Cabinet reshuffle. Indonesia's well-regarded finance minister, Sri Mulyani Indrawati, was removed from her position on Monday as part of a broader cabinet shuffle. In other words, this just happened. It's Reuters reporting. With the president appointing an economist to replace her to run Southeast Asia's largest economy and fears of a slowdown, the new minister, finance minister, is Purbaya Yudi Sadiwa, who says 8% economic growth was not impossible. Is this going to quell the doubts, or are we talking about shuffling the same old deck, Kelly?
Well, Sri Mulyani is very well regarded. She's, you know, former World Bank. She's internationally known as one of the smartest people in Indonesia and very well regarded by the international markets and all of that. So actually, I worry that it will make the markets and make them more nervous, that because she is a more disciplined, she's not as populist as Prabowo. In a way, he chose her to kind of take some of the rough edges off of his form of populism that he has been running on and has been trying to govern from. But because she is a disciplined and traditional economist out of the Chicago school, and so it's going to maybe upset some markets. And the question is whether the kind of sugar rush that the new finance minister will push into the economy to achieve this 8% or plus growth will it may help in the short term, but it will exacerbate the long-term imbalances in the Indonesian economy and probably undo some of the things that the more conservative-minded economists have tried to do to fix some of Indonesia's fiscal and economic imbalances.
We have about a minute, Gordon. Go ahead.
Kelly, what are Jakarta's relationships with Beijing at the moment?
As I said, they're always trying to balance. You know, they're trying to stay out of great power geopolitics, but so they take a lot of money. They're Belt and Road partners. They do a lot of things with the Chinese economically because the Chinese are there and they're willing to invest. But there's a lot of tensions. They, you know, for instance, the Chinese invested in a huge nickel mine in Indonesia. And it's been a lot of problems for the Indonesians because of the environmental and social consequences of the way the Chinese run that nickel mine. And so the Indonesians have been pushing to take control higher up the value chain. And there's been a lot of fighting over that nickel mine, tussling back and forth. So it's a, you know, it's a complicated, again, fairly typical Southeast Asian balancing, hedging kind of relationship where they want to stay friendly with the United States, want the U.S. more involved to balance China, but will take the Chinese investment and will. And, you know, Prabowo is going to be a little more pro-China because he's a more authoritarian guy. And so he's going to not appreciate any U.S. or Western concerns about his human rights past or his current kind of way of governing.
Kelly Curry, Senior Fellow, Atlantic Council, former U.S. Ambassador to the U.N., Gordon Chang, I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy, thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.